It's time for the Hour of Power, where numerous churches and ministries in Western Oklahoma come together to produce a program found on the internet at therockchristianmusic.com. If you have a specific prayer request, or you would like to share about an answer to prayer in your life, text the word PRAY to 68683, then share your request. This is your connection to other Christ followers and prayer warriors. Welcome to the Hour of Power.
Tuned into the Hour of Power this morning. It is the most powerful hour of my day. I'm your hostess this morning, Monica Lovell. The beautiful Miss Neva Pyatt is over there running the iPad. And our guest this morning is Mr. Tom Ivester. How are you doing this morning, sir?
Doing fine. Doing good.
Good. If you have a praise report or a prayer request, you can send that to our email, hourofpower@cableone.net, or you can post it to our Facebook page. And we will do our best to get it on paper and pray for you about halfway through the program. We do record in two parts, and we'll get it posted shortly after the program is ended. Our sponsor for today is Barber Dyson Ford Lincoln, located here in Elk City, Oklahoma. If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, contact them over there at Barber Dyson Ford Lincoln. They can find you what you're looking for. I think I covered it all, sir. Would you please pray to start us out?
I'm going to start out with a song, which in my mind is a prayer.
Okay.
Here we go.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way.
That's a good one to start us out. As you know, we mostly do songs when I'm here, and I read from the Proverbs. I'm not a preacher. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a long-term Sunday school teacher, so I make no big claims to fame. So I just play some music and read the Proverbs. Although I am reading a book, and I want to talk a little bit about it today. But I'll start off with Proverbs 27. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, someone else and not your own lips. Stone is heavy and sand a burden, but provocation by a fool is heavier than both. Anger is cruel and fury overwhelming, but who can stand before jealousy? Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. He who is full loathes honey, but to the hungry even what is bitter tastes sweet. Like a bird that strays from its nest is a man who strays from his home. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of one's friend springs from his earnest counsel. Do not forsake your friend and the friend of your father, and do not go to your brother's house when disaster strikes you. Better a neighbor nearby than a brother far away. Be wise, my son, and bring joy to my heart. Then I can answer anyone who treats me with contempt. The prudent see danger and take refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. Take the garment of one who puts up security for a stranger. Hold it in pledge if he does it for a wayward woman. If a man loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. You know, I read those, and some of them are fairly straightforward and simple to understand. Some of them you're like, don't get it. Need an interpretation. And sometimes you hear a preacher talk about it, and you can buy books that kind of explain what some of that means. So we're going to listen to another song. Let's see if I can find it here. Search for it. And this is called The Loser Blues. I just like it. So here we go.
I lost my heart again, lost my mind. I've lost the kind of love that seems so hard to find. I've lost most everything a man could lose. Lord, am I, if I could only lose these blues. I lost my train of thought, I'm a losing sleep. I even lost my count when I tried counting sheep. I lost my appetite, and that's big news. Lord, am I, if I can only lose these blues. It seems no matter how I try, I just keep losing ground. I even got lost trying to find the local lost and found. Lost all my rhythm, even lost my blues. Lord, am I, if I can only lose these blues. Or even got lost trying to find the local lost and found. I've lost all direction, I'm born to lose. Lord, am I, if I could only lose these blues. I'm the loser, and I'm paying my dues. Lord, am I, if I could only lose these blues. Oh, well, it seems no matter how I try, I just keep losing ground. I even got lost trying to find the local lost and found.
That because it's one of those melancholy songs where he's lost everything, but he's kind of singing a bouncy little song about it. Can't quite tell whether he's happy or not, or just crying, laughing in his pain. I just like it because it's kind of bouncy. He I went to a funeral this week, and it's probably the second funeral I've been to since my dad's funeral in 2019. I quit going to funerals. And, in fact, Neva was at my dad's funeral. Yeah, so after that, I quit going to funerals. I think I've been to two, and that was maybe the second one. And
I have to say how special your dad's funeral was. I mean, it would be in the top of a list of five.
Well, thanks.
Well, just for those that didn't go or don't know, Tom added some things to it. His children played, a couple of them played a duet on the piano, and it was just such a warm, great funeral.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And it wasn't, I can't point to that, but there's a lot of different reasons I stopped going to funerals. You know, like I said, that one I went to this week, it was probably the second one I've been to in 3 or 4 years. And after I went, I wish I hadn't have gone, for a lot of different reasons. But so I've been reading this book lately, and it was interesting because it had something in there about a funeral. So it was by this woman, and she grew up here in Oklahoma, and she had problems with her mother growing up. A very contentious relationship with her mother, and she was the oldest of three daughters, and it was contentious up to the very end. There was no reconciliation. There was no big forgiveness. It was contentious up to the very end, even on the deathbed. And so at the funeral, since she was the oldest daughter and she was a preacher, she gave the eulogy. And so she did what everybody does at funerals, which is there's a set pattern for funerals. I mean, they follow a script of one of about, you know, you want, pick the menu. You've got your choice of one of six funerals, right? A couple of three songs that are either canned or they're live. You know, you've got a preacher who gets up and reads the obituary, and then maybe a eulogy, or some friends get up and speak, or the preacher gets up and speaks again. And that's it. And so and she talks about at the funeral, and I'll read this. She said, at the funeral, I compiled with the protocol of remembrance. I complied, you know, she followed the script, the protocol of remembrance, and offered an elegant reflection on her life, a celebration of life, a good mother, loving wife, woman of faith, servant of the community, pilot, therapist, spiritual director. And in good form, I reminded everyone that she was now, as she has always been, held in the loving grasp of God's grace and mercy. We all wept. She was buried with her brother on one side, an empty plot for my father on the other. After the funeral, we all gathered at her home and told funny stories about her, you know, funny quirks. And they were all good memories, and they were real ones. And it says, on my flight back home the day after, I stared out the window, and I had a powerful sense that something wasn't right, and that all the unresolved pain that was left hanging was still there. About a week after the funeral, I pulled up the eulogy that I had written and that the church had published online, and I couldn't help but begin to write another version, and I wrote a second eulogy. And I had been wrestling with the funeral, feeling like I'd somehow failed to speak the full truth about sin and grace, about mercy and justice. I recalled how I'd felt the summer I discovered, you know, certain truths in my own life. I grappled with all the stories my family had never told me about our past, huge pieces of important information cut out and forgotten. And I couldn't leave her story with its own hard parts lofted off. I could feel in my bones that deep connection between justice and mercy. And until the truth of injustice is revealed, mercy has nothing to land on, to hold, and to mend. And then she goes on and she publishes, she puts in this book the second eulogy. And I want to listen to another song or two, but I want to read this eulogy, because it was powerful. And I've talked about it with my wife. she's of one mind and I'm of another. You know, people don't go to funerals to air out dirty laundry, is what she's told me over and over. I get it. I understand that. But it's like there's something left out. And I'm not talking about all funerals, and I'm not talking about this funeral I went to. It's just my own sense of internal angst of going to funerals. Of like, is that it? Is that the whole story? Because I really don't think that was the whole story. And we're missing something, and something important. But then again, funerals, you know, of course, they're not for the dead. They're for the living and those family members. And grief is a very tricky emotion. Of course, there's traditional, now psychologically, are there stages of grief, you know, denial and disbelief and acceptance and anger. People go through those stages at different times, and of course, they can loop back to them. This was a different. She actually wrote a second eulogy, and she published it.
Wow.
So, anyway. I thought that was very interesting. It kind of was like, I've felt that about a lot of things. So I want to play a song right after I read this verse. This is the Proverbs chapter 28, verse 1. The wicked man flees, though no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion. So that particular scripture came up on one of my more favorite movies, True Grit. It was the remake of True Grit. And the movie starts, and it's a black screen, and that scripture pops up on the screen. And the movie is about a young girl who is going after and pursuing her father's killer, and no one will go after him. The law won't go after the killer. And she finds this guy, an almost irredeemable federal marshal who hires basically a gun for hire and a prolific alcoholic and a prolific swearer and a killer, really. And he's the only one that'll hold his hand up and go after the killer. And it's a wonderful movie. Of course, the original one was with John Wayne. But in the remake, this song was in that movie, and I love the remake of this song, because traditionally it's a traditional hymn and you sing it in church and you've heard it one way, but this is kind of a one take on it, and it was in this movie and I love it. So here it is.
What a fellowship, what a joy divine, leaning on the everlasting arms, leaning
Okay, most people recognize that song, a traditional church hymn that most of us have sang a lot, kind of a different version of it, which I liked. I want to read this eulogy, and I'll probably break it in two, because it's a couple of different, couple of three or four pages. So this is, she had given the eulogy at her mother's funeral, and this is a pastor, by the way, and went home several days later and wrote a second eulogy. Not really changing the first eulogy, but adding to it, saying she'd spoken the truth during the first eulogy, but she had left out a lot. So here it is. She's talking about her mother. She grew up too fast as a child, really. She never had a childhood, nor was she mothered as she could have been or should have been. She was left alone to fight her way forward in a world where women were not yet allowed to fight, much less to unfold their wings and fly. She had to wait until she was 40 for that, when she learned to actually fly. It was brilliant to watch her take to the skies, literally, but even then her flying itself was captive to her own unhealed wounds, and she finally could not escape them, and she sadly left it to her family to bear the heaviness of her wings. She was too beautiful for her own good. People liked her too easily for her to learn what it meant to earn it. And because of that, it was hard for her to trust what their liking her really meant. It also made it impossible for her to feel compassion for others who weren't like her very beautiful. The privilege of her beauty stopped her from claiming the joy compassion actually brings. There were mother things she never taught her daughters to do: put on makeup, do our hair, shave our legs, go shopping for clothes, cook, clean. She hated these things. This failure may have to do with the fact that looking beautiful was so effortless for her, she wished it would be equally easy for us. But it wasn't. She was also probably relieved in her vanity that on this score we couldn't compete. May also have been that long before feminism was on the scene, our mother knew these things didn't matter because they mattered too much. Those who knew her well knew she wrestled with demons, including her brother Sam Jones's alcoholism and eventual suicide. She also wrestled with imaginary demons that existed only in her embittered mind. That's how she saw me, a demon daughter whose simple childhood needs were threats to the freedom she wanted so desperately but never had. Her torment of me still stayed strong to the bitter end. Her mightiest demon, of course, was the one that drove her into an affair that she hid for years and then used as a weapon against us. To this day, those of us who know about it can't get our minds around it, particularly her sustained lying and her lack of regret. Perhaps her lost childhood was what she sought to find in her affair. Perhaps only her late-in-life disease made her hurt us again and again with its telling. We were left not knowing. All of this rests partly in the fact that our mother wasn't good at forgiveness toward anyone, but especially forgiveness for her own flawed humanness. Was it because she worked so hard at appearing perfectly loving all day long that when she came home at night she had real love left for herself or her closest loves? The most cursed thing of all is that she was struck down too early in her life by an affliction that twisted her inside and outside, and the last years were nightmarish. Her disease slowly pulled her into its shadowy cave, and it finally killed her, there alone in its shadows. Each day our father cared for her, fed her, tended her, and experienced her meanness grow as the disease pulled her in. She did not go gently into that good night, nor did she allow us to be gently beside her in those shadows. But that's not the last word about her. I have one more word to add to this list of her sins and graces. Our mother fancied herself the mystic in the family. As one friend said, she was a spiritual director before it was cool. Her bedroom and office were filled with prayer beads and poems by Emily Dickinson. She knitted prayer shawls for us girls, hoping we'd wear them and feel her praying for us. There were always candles burning, oils smelling, feathers, trinkets hanging, and sweet gospel music filling the sacred space she created wherever she went, her altars. She even became an oblate, working with religious sisters in a nearby convent, seeking silent retreat and a life of contemplative prayer, maybe seeking truth, too, something that had, before then, evaded her. What did this mean in terms of her faith? Well, she was not an orderly theologian, that's for sure. She believed that spirits lived in the woods around the lake house, that our life force energy never died, the angels were around us all the time, and the dead sometimes speak to us, that some people had a gift of second sight, like herself. She believed that time itself was a cycle that circled back on itself, and that people had destinies and callings that were divinely planned, hers especially. Because as with all of us, believing her own most cherished belief was hard for her, and in the end, I don't know which of these beliefs managed to hold steady inside her. I do know that she stopped believing in mercy, either human or divine. Maybe she never fully accepted it because she never experienced solid, anchored love as a child. That hardness of her unforgiving soul left her frightened and furious to the end. More than any place in the world, our mother loved our family cabin, a home she named Anchor Point. She wanted it to be a place where friends and family could experience safe harbor. What that safe harbor meant was tables full of food, lots of laughter, dancing, singing, arguing politics, big ideas, and any silly thing you think to talk about, always with intensity and passion. Yes, sometimes we had too much fun, and at times we fought too much to measure up to our own anchoring name. But in the end, the place itself seemed able to hold tenderly that part of our family too, our brokenness. It also meant before dinner saying prayers where everyone had to share what they were most thankful for and sing amen with gusto. The singing was joyful, yes, but also perhaps a collective plea for forgiveness for the sins and secrets we all carried, especially our mother. It's pretty powerful stuff. And it goes on. And as I was reading this, I'm like, and I'll continue. But I was reading, I'm like, this sounds real. And to me, it was good because I'm like, this is just a family. This isn't extraordinary, out of the ordinary. This is like almost like any other family. Hey, we've got people we love. We're flawed. We have our own tics. I guarantee you there are things my kids will say about me that are good, that are bad, that are funny, that are not so funny. Things they don't want to admit about me, that I don't want to admit about myself. There are things about my mother I don't want to admit, you know, and my father and other family members. You know, it was just honest. And that's what I liked about it. So, anyway, I am going to.
Would now be a good time for prayer break?
Yes, absolutely. It's a perfect time for prayer.